This is Murder Scotland, a podcast that looks at famous and not so famous murders that happened in Scotland or were committed by people with a connection to Scotland. We'll just see how tenuous we can get. My name is Julie Lamont. Me and my co-host Alan Nicol will look at these crimes with 21st century eyes and discuss, are they really what we thought they were? This week we've got a sneaky extra bonus episode for you. Alan and I decided we would go out and have a look at the crime scene where Helen Puttock was found. So forgive the audio quality because it was quite windy that day, but this is our experience. And if you would like to have a look at what 95 Earl Street looks like or the route that we took, we've put it on our website at www.murderscotland.com.
This would have been a railway then in the 1960s that we're walking along, right?
Yes, it was a railway embankment at the time that she tried to run up. What happened was she got the taxi to stop, I think, at number 95, because 129, where she stayed, is on a corner, and she didn't want her husband to see that she'd come out of a taxi with a man.
Yeah.
So he obviously got out of the taxi at the same time as she did, and then somehow he ended up down here.
You think it's just over here?
It's just here.
It would be here. Wow. So we're looking at like red tenement buildings, which I guess since have been rough cast,
yeah,
at the back. But there's a really steep embankment between where we're standing and where the gardens for the tenements begin. I'm guessing then it would have been outside toilets as well, right?
I don't think so. I think they probably had kind of basic toilet facilities in 1969.
Because I was just thinking like there might have been outbuildings or something at the back as well. You'd think at least there'd be like coal built, like, you know, places to keep the coal. Or
there could have been, but from looking at this, the body was found just on to our right, but when you came out the back door of the close, to the left of the door, just where these the road pipe is.
Right, so she wasn't found on the embankment.
She was found lying there, face down.
Yeah.
And her coat pulled up over her head.
Wow. Okay.
And it would appear from her muddy feet, although her shoes were still on for some reason. I think maybe he put her shoes back on. I don't know what that was about. Maybe the thing about shoes, because Pat Docker's shoes were missing, but he obviously had chased after her once she came out the back court, and she tried to run up this embankment here just in front of us.
Oh, I can see why she didn't manage it, because it's so steep.
It's really steep.
I don't know that it had all these like brambles or blackberry bushes on it then, but I mean,
no,
it does now.
It does now, so I'd imagine when it was a railway, it was probably better maintained than it is now.
But still, you'd have to be like Spider Woman to get up here. It's so steep.
Yeah, I think so, because she was obviously very desperate. So that's my theory.
I didn't realise how close it was to the building, because, I mean, I can't believe somebody didn't hear that. Because we're talking like where she was found was basically right below some windows.
Yeah.
And there must be easily, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 flats in that,
yeah,
that building.
I think that's right, but at the same time, I think somebody came forward and said they'd heard a woman saying no or shouting something, but that was it. And I suspect that whoever heard it, because people must have heard it, they just put it down to, you know, a drunken couple in the back court
having an argument.
Maybe having an argument, I don't know. But the other alternative, I suppose, is that he knocked her out fairly quickly.
Do you think, so between the buildings there's quite a big space, and there's definitely like modern fences to stop people getting in, but do you think that would have been the way they'd have come in rather than through the close?
I think that was probably right, because in those days they didn't have secure doors.
Oh, right, so people could just walk through.
You could just walk through, and it would easily be that without the modern fences, you could have just come between the buildings to go in here.
Yeah.
So I suspect that what's happened is he has come out the taxi persuaded her to go into the close, or indeed, you know, forced her into the close, and or into the back court. And then he's just attacked her and knocked her out fairly quickly, because she was badly beaten, and he's obviously attacked her. She's tried to run up this embankment, and then he's managed to get her down on the ground. He's taken her stocking and wrapped it around her neck and murdered her and raped her as well.
I've also got to say, I can't believe that nobody saw anything. I know you say somebody heard something, but if anything happened on this embankment, I mean, this embankment, we're standing at the top of the embankment, and we can look directly into the second and third floor flats.
Uh-huh.
Like, you've got such a good view of this embankment that it would, anyone had just, like, looked out the window, they would have seen.
Uh-huh,
God,
yeah.
So, what a risky... For somebody that was, like, a premeditated murderer, you know?
Well,
this is a really risky place to murder somebody.
I think that's right, and I suspect that the same applied to the Pat Docker murder as well, because that was out in the open, too.
Yeah.
The other one in the middle, Jemima MacDonald, I think was obviously more secluded because it was the derelict building. But in this one, his main aim, I think, was to murder rather than to rape. And I think rape was a sort of secondary thought in his mind.
If this was a serial killer, he's no great mastermind. This is not.
It was very risky. Imagine if somebody, as you say, somebody came out to come to our assistance, and they've got him.
Yeah.
They've got
him.
Yeah.
We could have had easily six flats worth of people that saw you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, more than that, because like I'm making out there's just like one building with six flats in it. The building that she was found behind is connected to, like, what?
It's a tenement, yeah. So there's lots and lots of flats.
Yeah, there's another, like, one, two, three, four, like, five on that block.
Yeah, there's a big row, yeah.
With six in each of, in each building. I mean, they look a bit like American kind of brownstone buildings, but not to such a grand scale. It's that kind of idea, like Victorian red sandstone buildings.
So it's said that when the body was found, and it was found by somebody who lived at that number, 95, he's taking his dog out a walk, and he suddenly came across this body, and he went across the road, and I think he tried to... No, he went to a neighbour's house, I think, and then the neighbour wasn't in, and then tried to use a phone box, but it had been vandalised. But he eventually got through to the police, and I think the... emergency services, there was the ambulance who came first, and they tried to speak to her. They weren't convinced she was dead, but she'd been dead for hours, apparently.
Yeah.
Obviously from about, I don't know, 12:30 or something. And this was about 7:30 in the morning. And apparently when the police were called and the ambulance were there, all the windows were taken up with people hanging out to watch what was going on.
Yeah.
Because for them, I suppose it was entertainment, as people tend to do, like rubberneckers at a road crash.
Yeah.
So apparently there were hundreds of people watching what was going on. And worse than that, given the fact that we've now got this sort of forensic approach to murders, there were people coming in and out the back court here.
Wow.
And they were walking all over it,
looking
for things. And apparently the police had to get rid of everybody before they could start picking stuff up. So,
would it be possible that one of those people were the person that covered her up? I mean, because you'd imagine there'd been 100% there'd have been children living in these buildings. Maybe they did it to so that people wouldn't stare at her body.
Well,
other than the murderer.
That's a possibility, but I think the chap who lived there at number 95, he'd found her like that.
Yeah.
He'd found her like that, so she was sort of naked from the bottom down, but her head was covered up, which I think we've said this already. It's really strange that a stranger should do that to somebody, because that is classic. You know, I know this person, I don't want them looking at me, and I don't want to look at them anymore.
Yeah. And also strange that somebody would, like, pull her clothes up to cover her face. Like, that doesn't make sense, just to if it was in case children or other people were going to be rubbernecking at the corpse.
To
expose her more, that wouldn't make any sense either.
It wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
On the other hand, maybe it was the killer that did that, because, you know, he wasn't interested in anything other than just killing her and having sex with her.
Yeah,
so
he didn't want to look her face.
It didn't bother him in the least, I don't think.
But also, it makes me feel like less and less like that she sort of consensually was going to be having a bit of a snog or whatever with this guy, because this is not a private place.
No.
I mean, you could easily, if we just yelled out right now, I feel like we could have a good 300 people staring at us in this space of five minutes.
I would think so. Which again suggests that they've come out of the taxi. She's taken them a good distance from where she lives to try and make sure her husband doesn't see her coming out of the taxi with a man.
Yeah.
And he's persuaded her, as I say, or perhaps forced her to come to the back court here. And that would, to me, suggest that he's made up his mind, this is what he's going to do. He's going to take her into the back court. He's going to force himself on her.
Yeah.
Or he's going to be violent towards her, firstly. So I think when you come to the locus, this area, you get a better idea of exactly what was going through his mind.
Yeah, it's not at all what I thought it was going to be. Because, I mean, sometimes when you, like, these tenement buildings can back onto other tenement buildings, and
uh-huh.
there's lots of buildings in the back, and you can kind of see how it could be quite private, but not here. This is not a private situation at all.
It's
in fact,
not.
We've had quite a lot of people staring at us for standing here with Mike.
Yeah, that's true. So, in other words, he hadn't planned anything. This was a spur of the moment, and he was taking his chance. Because if he was at all planned, he would never have attacked her here.
Yeah. Will we walk round the front and have a wee look?
Yes, let's do that.
The walk she might have taken.
Let's do that.
Right, so we've got to number 95, where she was dropped off.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if this is the only bit on the street, but there's a big space between the buildings.
Yeah.
But also, it extra feels very open down here as well, because across the street is kind of where the main road is. This is not a very private location to take somebody.
It's not, but it's far enough away. It's probably about 200 yards away from where the taxi should have dropped her off. And I think that's because number 129, where she stayed, there's a good clear view of the rest of the street.
Yeah.
So she must have got the taxi to stop here on the pretense that she was actually, she lived here, because, I mean, Bible John, should he exist, he probably didn't have a clue where she stayed.
Yeah.
So she just obviously trying to get rid of him before she went home.
Is that, or they split the taxi and he was...
But he paid the taxi, apparently.
Oh, he paid it. Yeah. You can see her own flat from here.
Like, yes.
We're looking at it.
You can just see it.
Yeah.
You can just see it, but...
Well, it's not like you can just see it like it's a million miles away.
You can just
see into it from here. Do you know what I mean? It's
still... Yeah, but I still think that's just long enough away for her to be able to say to this guy, you know,
like,
that's me, I live round about here, etc. Go away, I'm going home. And he's forced her in here at number 95.
Yeah.
Or followed her in, I don't know. But... I think
if there was somebody standing at that out the window in that flat, we could see, right?
Oh, it depends which flat
which
they stayed in.
On,
yes.
I'm looking at like bottom and middle, but like top flat would be difficult, wouldn't it?
I think it'd be more difficult. Plus, if they stayed on the other side of the
left
hand side,
they
wouldn't see a thing.
You wouldn't see at all.
Yeah.
OK. Okay, cool. Would you want to walk around and we'll have a look at the...
Well, let's look at number 129 and then I'll show you where you got the bus.
Okay. Right, okay, I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now we're up close, yeah. Because I could easily see the right-hand flats, but you couldn't see the left-hand flats at all from there.
Looking at them from here, there's half of the building you wouldn't be able to see somebody getting out of a taxi at number 95. So I think that does explain why she got the taxi to there rather than to home. I mean, she obviously hadn't sensed anything evil about this guy, because otherwise she'd get the taxi directly to the door and then shouted at her husband if she thought there was something bad about to happen, because he was in.
Yeah, the husband might have been the bigger fear, you know, that she was scared of his reaction to her being in a taxi with another man.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was on leave from the army, so she decided to go dancing instead of spending time with him. So, you don't know, I'd imagine that he wasn't particularly chuffed about it.
Yeah. So where do we think the bus stop would have been then that he was...
Right. Okay, let's jump in the car again. Okay. I'll take you around.
All right.
I assume that once Helen Puttock's killer had achieved what he wanted to achieve, that he ran along towards Dumbarton Road, which is, less than 100 yards away.
Yeah.
And it would seem that if the sightings of him were correct, then he was about 2 miles away before he got on a bus. But it may be that... Now, there's a bus stop coming up on the left-hand side, which is just where number 95 is.
Yeah, just
along the road
the
street, there. Yeah, it's 100 yards away. So maybe he stood at the bus stop, and then when there were no buses appearing, he's just decided to walk and just look out for a bus as he's walked. But he ends up, if it's the same person, walking about 2 miles before he gets a bus. And it's much, much later. It's a few hours later.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, we're passing by quite a few bus stops.
Yeah.
So he's gone by quite a few. But then, I guess, if you've just murdered somebody, maybe you want to get as far away from that as possible.
Yeah, and just any way you can, I suppose. Yeah, just run or whatever. But I think the layout was slightly different as well in those days. This bit here, I think, is a more modern addition. This bend in the road. But we're coming up to another bus stop. And there's another one there used to be one just along here.
Yeah, there's one there, yeah.
And that's where my family stayed, just on the left-hand side. Just behind the bowling green.
It's really nice. The house that you guys lived in, I mean, I know it wasn't like the best area, but it must have been nice living in there.
That was a good area at the time, Matt. It was absolutely fine. You know, and as we say, when... we're talking about 1969. Just across the road was a real pretty rough working class area, but where we had stayed was actually definitely middle class, no doubt about it.
It feels like we've gone really far now. If it's the same guy, this guy's still running or walking. It must have taken him a really long time to get all the way along here.
It must have taken them hours, actually. I know it's only two miles, but at the same time, if it's the same person, it doesn't quite tie up in terms of time, because if he was walking from where we've just come from, then he'd have done it, well, what would it take you? An hour maximum?
Yeah.
Whereas I think this person was sighted in the bus around about 4 o'clock in the morning or slightly after that.
It's a long time after they got out of that taxi.
Yeah. I wonder if it's just another sort of red herring.
Because
we've had a few in this case already.
It's funny that the bus driver and the ticket inspector corroborated like Jeannie's description, but it's hard, isn't it? Because you just don't know how the police presented things in the 1960s. If they were saying, did you see a man with... I mean, I know you've said before, oh, they'd never put words in somebody's mouth, but, like, they could have. It was the 1960s.
Well, actually, another part of this case involves somebody called Paddy Meehan, and he was well stitched up. There's absolutely no doubt about it. The police pulled out all the stops to get him convicted, and it worked.
Yeah.
Until he was pardoned.
Pardoned because, like, they pulled out illegal stops, you mean? They were...
yes, what they did was they... I'll deal with this, obviously, at some point, but at the same time, they ensured that there was evidence against them. And it was undoubtedly done by senior police officers.
Yeah. I can't believe we're still going, and it's...
Yeah, we're still going.
This is a big distance from...
It's a good distance. As I say, it's a couple of miles.
Yeah.
But...
A couple of miles doesn't sound much, but when you're driving it and you're thinking somebody's doing that at night in the cold, having just killed somebody, and apparently covered in mud and in a state of disarray with a black eye. That seems crazy that they would have covered this amount of distance and nobody else saw anything or thought anything or came forward.
Well, if he was in such a state that it was remarkable to people on the bus and they noticed it, then if you're walking along the street, there's a more chance of actually seeing people. You know, it was 12:30 at night when he left there, or it was certainly, let's say, 1:00, and the chances of you walking along Dumbarton Road in a terrible state and not being spotted, I think is quite remote.
Yeah.
Now we're approaching the area where this suspect got on the bus, and it's just coming up on the left-hand side. I don't know if there was a bus stop just here at the time, but there is one still just at the traffic lights down there.
Yeah, I see it, just past the traffic lights.
Yeah, and this is Gardner Street. You know, you'll see it's a really, really steep street. I'll just go down here and I'll let you see.
Oh, it was actually on Gardner Street, it wasn't?
No, it was beyond Gardner Street.
Oh, so beyond Gardner Street, so probably it was that one on the corner
It probably was, but...
Gosh, it's so far. I can't believe this.
It's really, like, really...
Wow, really far away.
Yeah.
When they said that he'd got on a bus, I mean, I just assumed this was like a few streets away because I didn't know where Gardner Street was.
Well, this is Gardner Street here. Sadly, I've come down a one-way street.
That is...
Can't go back.
The problem with Glasgow, there are so many one-way streets. It's such a maze, this city.
Right, okay. I'll go here and go right. I'll go back down to Dumbarton Road. And then what we'll do is we'll go to where this person got off the bus.
Okay.
So he didn't stay on for long.
Oh, really? So he walked all this way and then got on the bus for just like a few stops?
Yeah, that's what they say. That was the theory.
That's crazy.
So... As I say, when it came to McInnes, he lived in a place called Stonehouse in Lanarkshire. How the hell would he ever get home, you know, at that time in the morning?
Yeah.
You know, from to Stonehouse.
When you read about how many people lived in some of those tenements, and you see the size of the one that Helen was living in, and I think, they're not big at all. And some of these had like multiple families living in them and stuff at different times.
Plus at one time it was a shared toilet that was in the first floor or something, and it was like 10 families sharing it.
Do you know the reason I asked why, if they might have had like toilets around the back, was my cousin Shona. When she went to uni in, like, I think it must have been, like, the early 90s. She's going to be mad at me if I've got the date wrong. but she went to uni in Paisley, and she was staying in a tenement, and it had, it still had its outside toilets.
Sorry.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there was a big uproar, and they got that fixed really quick, but... unbelievable. That's why in my head I was thinking 1968. Yeah, I guess
they
could have still had the outside toilets. There might have been more buildings around the back. Right, so that's the bus stop. Yeah, so far from where he was.
So you begin to wonder if it was the same person, because he got on the bus here and he got off just beyond the museum and art gallery.
Oh, really? And that's not far from here at all.
It's not. It's probably about a mile maximum. So he's walked 2 miles to get on a bus to travel for less than a mile.
Yeah, I would say less than a mile. That's crazy. And then what? It's not like that's near a like train station or anything like that. And any buses going this way presumably would have ended up more sort of in the city centre.
Excuse me, I'm going to shout at that kid. Hey, Jenny!
Glasgow's such a small place, isn't it?
It really is. It's a village at times.
Yeah. I mean, we can already see where where he would have got off.
Just about.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And we've just passed by the bus stop. That's crazy. I just don't get that, because presumably the bus would have kept going towards the city centre, where he could have actually got some other public transport to wherever it was he was trying to get to.
Well, if it was John McInnes, he'd want to get into the city centre to try and then get a bus at some point in the day out to towards Lanarkshire.
Yeah.
Or even a train or whatever. But for Bible John allegedly to have committed the murder 2 miles away from here and then travelled less than a mile in the bus to get off somewhere in Kelvin Grove, it suggests that he maybe, whoever had done it, was staying in Kelvin Grove or had friends and was staying with people. It's hard to understand why he would take the bus for such a short journey.
One of the newspaper articles I read said something about that he could have walked a ferry. Was there a ferry round here then?
There was, actually. That's right, just down there towards the Clyde. The Clyde's on our right hand side. There was a ferry that took you over to Govan, but it wouldn't be running at that time.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way it'd be running at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you're right. It also doesn't tie in with this, like, kind of middle class accent this guy's putting on, that he would be go to Govan at like 4 a.m.
It doesn't tie in. You wonder how much of the information they got from the start was correct, with him being posh and, you know, being a mummy's boy and all that sort of stuff. I wonder if I was played up slightly.
Well, all things are relative, right? I mean, you know, like, you meet people sometimes and they think people are posh and they're, like, I mean, I've met people before that have, in Glasgow, who have full-on said, oh, you've got really posh accent, blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. But then the reality is, it's like, you know, I couldn't be further away from, like, the Chelsea, people in Chelsea in London, or, like, Rishi Sunak, you know what I mean?
Of course, uh-huh.
Like, there's nothing posh, really, about us. We went to state school. But,
yeah, of course.
I think all things are relative, aren't they, I guess?
Well, I suppose so, but, you know, the people who frequented the Barrowland, they generally tended not to be, you know, middle class or posh or whatever, which makes you wonder, why would the same person who is posh go there at the risk of standing out so obviously?
Yeah, it's weird. So even in whatever world this guy was waiting to go and get the ferry to Govan, he'd have been having to stand outside in the cold for like several hours. Like I'm imagining probably it started about 7 or something like that. Maybe 6 if he was lucky. That doesn't make sense either.
Right, we're coming up to where the suspect apparently got off the
right
bus.
Right here at the Fox and Inch?
It was just here at what's now the Ox and Finch.
Ox and Finch,
and
yeah.
It was the Lawn Hotel is where people say he got off, or some people in the bus.
There's a bus stop right there, yeah.
Yep.
It's probably not changed.
It probably hasn't.
Wow, that's crazy.
So what was the point of him going that short journey in the bus at the risk of being spotted when he could have walked along the road? Okay, people would have seen him, but they wouldn't be able to study him the way you would in a bus.
I mean, this, when you'd already walked, like, let's say, an hour and a half to get to, or 2 hours to get to the first bus stop, this is maximum another 20-minute walk, I think.
I think so. You'd think if you had accommodation here, then you would just walk from, if you didn't catch a bus at all, you would just walk from Scotson to here.
Yeah.
It would make much more sense, wouldn't it?
I mean, the Ox and Finch wasn't here. He wasn't coming for
some
gourmet dinner.
No. He wasn't going for an Indian meal either, which is the wee restaurant that's there now. So it's a bit of a puzzle if it was the same person.
If you like our podcast, then please like and share with your friends. We would love to hear your feedback and ideas on Twitter at Murder Scotland. If you'd like any more information on our sources or Alan's books, you can find us at www.murderscotland.com. Murder Scotland is written, presented and produced by Alan Nicol. Presented, produced and edited by me, Julie Lament. Edited by Seb Sanger. Content edited by Paige Henderson, tech support by Steve Garside, artwork by Thea Primrose, music is called Moments by Adrian Walther, and a special thanks to Steve Garside and Miriam Watson for their unending support and patience with me and Alan.